I want to tell you about a podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. As a parent myself of a child who's had an IEP since kindergarten and he's now a 10th grader, I know how confusing, overwhelming, frustrating, sometimes daunting the whole process can be. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 Plans. And what I love about it is how easily Juliana explains everything. She answers common questions that probably every parent or caregiver has. She dispels myths and is concise and to the point. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. And there's a direct link in the show notes if you need it. This is the Your Kick-Ass Life podcast, episode 33. Any links or resources that you hear in this episode can be found at yourkickasslife.com/33.
This is the Your Kick-Ass Life podcast with Andrea Owen, a no BS guide to self-help and badassery. Because ladies, let's face it, life's too short for it to not kick ass. And here's your host, the girl who serves it up straight with a side of crazy, Andrea Owen.
Hey there, Ass Kickers. Very excited to bring you Michelle Ward today, who is a friend and colleague of mine. I wanted to take a moment to tell you a little bit about her. Michelle Ward has one question for you. What do you want to be when you grow up? She's answered that question for herself, and today she helps women transition out of soul-sucking jobs and into work that feels like play. You may have seen or heard her on Etsy, AOL Jobs, Newsweek, Freelancers Union, Psychology Today, the Forbes Top 100 Websites for Your Career List, or 100-plus other media outlets. Her first published book, The Declaration of You, was co-written with the artist Jessica Swift and can be found on real and virtual bookshelves everywhere. Discover what you want to be when you grow up at whenigrowupcoach.com. And here we go with today's episode. Hey, everybody, all my ass kickers. I am here with Michelle Ward. So excited. It's episode 33. So say hi, Michelle.
Hi, everyone. I'm going to sing it.
So I should explain. Michelle and I were talking right before I started the recording about how it's my wish, and she has the same wish, that everyone would just sing most of their language. And yeah. I think it's just happier, don't you think?
Yes. You know, I often talk to my clients about like creating their own, you know, your name here land. So for you, it'd be like Andrea Land or Michelle Land. And I always say that Michelle Land, everyone sings instead of speaks. What happens
in Shawland? Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's funny. I love it. Well, maybe we'll do a little bit of singing here in this episode.
Okay. I'm all warmed up.
Well, everyone's already heard your amazing introduction at your professional bio, so they know what you do. And I want to jump right into that, into what you do. And I love your tagline. And for those of you that aren't aware, so here's Michelle's tagline. I help creative women get out of their soul-sucking, energy-draining jobs and into work that feels like play while still being a grown-up. Okay, so... I mean, I'm not a career coach, but I have had clients who have sort of like offhandedly mentioned, whether it's in their intake packet or during a sessions, that they, you know, they mention their quote unquote stable job that they don't love or that they stress out over, you know, and it's just kind of like in the back of their mind. So, but I think that, then tell me where I'm wrong, but I think that most women can't imagine leaving a stable well-paying job. So I just am curious, like what you have to say to that.
Yeah. You know, I think, and I absolutely agree with you, but I think they can imagine it, but what they can't do is believe it. Like they can't believe that it's going to be lucrative or it's going to work out or they're going to be able to pay their bills or they're going to essentially quote unquote be able to be a grown up. So that's why I have this emphasis. And this is really why I call myself the When I Grow Up Coach, is, you know, half of it is that I help creative women discover and achieve what their grown-up passionate career is. But the other half of it is that, like, we're grown-ups. I get very few clients under the age of probably 28 or so. And now I'm seeing more and more women in their 40s coming to me, you know, because we're at this point where it's like, you know what? I can't just quit my job. I don't want to live with 10 roommates. I have two kids I need to feed, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like this different mindset than when we were all, you know, fresh out of college and you'll take whatever internship or, you know, job that you could go and travel everywhere, but there's no home base. Like, you want different things as a grown up than you do when you're younger. So those are the big reasons why I named my business the way that I did and really what I work on my clients with. Mm.
Yeah, I think, well, you know, that makes me curious because I think that, well, here's what I wonder. Mm. So the most of the women that do come to you, do they kind of already know what else they want to do, or do most of them have no idea and they just know they need a career change?
It varies. I would say about 90% of them come to me with an idea. Like, I always ask them in my intake form or talk to them in the consultation call about, like, what's the inkling? What are you thinking about doing? And I can't remember any clients, and at this point I've been coaching for, oh my gosh, 5 or 6 years. I've worked personally with like 250 people, and I literally can't think of one person that was like, I have no idea. Okay. I have no ideas. I have no inklings. But there are definitely people that come to me with more fully formed ideas, and ideas that they're more committed to. And then I get the people that are like, I'm thinking this, and maybe I'm thinking this, or maybe a bit of this. I'm like, I don't know how it would all come together, and I don't know how it would work. And all I know is that I'm ready for the change, but I don't know what that is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So it varies. It varies.
Yeah, now that you say all that, that makes more sense. Because I think that, you know, being a coach myself, I think that a lot of people come to us when they are kind of sick and tired of being sick and tired. And they have, like, one of the questions I ask in my intakes that's always so interesting, all of them are so interesting, but this one I think is one of my favorites, is what is the truth about you that you are unwilling to talk about?
Oh, that is such a big, juicy question.
And some people, like, blow my mind. And it's such a place of being really vulnerable and really, you know, trusting that person who's going to read the answer.
That's
because...
It.
And it could change from day to day, but most of us have, like, something that, you know, that could really change our life if we just said it out loud, really. Like, that's the very first step. Like, not even, like, digging deep and coming to any kind of resolution, but just saying it out loud to another human being. So I'm sure it's very liberating for your clients to come to you and start working with you.
Oh, big time. I mean, I hope so. But I think that there's also just power in the, and as you said, giving voice to it, and then actually starting to try it and starting to do it and following through on it. And even if it ends up not being the quote unquote right thing or the thing they end up doing long term, I've never heard a client say, oh, I just really regret doing that. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's what's so powerful about coaching and the coaching process and the time that we spend with our clients. And for me, when I work one-on-one with someone, we work together for a minimum of 4 months, but also not that much longer than that. And so they know they have the space to, like, I'm not only giving them exercises or giving them worksheets or whatever, but I'm making them do the things that they tell you. So it's kind of, be careful what you wish for. Because, you know, if you tell me on the intake form that, like, you have been dreaming of being a writer for years and years, but yet you've never written any of the stories that you have in your head, probably the first thing I'm going to make you do, quote unquote, is to write a story.
Yeah.
And that's the homework. And so
life depends on it.
Absolutely. And just doing it and having it be, you know, this is always easier said than done, but, like, we're taking the pressure off. I don't make them do anything. I'm not saying to them, you writing the story means you're going to have to pursue a career as a writer. Like, it's not it at all, but giving them that pressure-free space to just be like, what is it going to be like to write a story? What is it you want to say? What do you want to talk about? Why is it important to you? What would you want to share? Then that leads also to its own, like, epiphanies and realizations and clarity for them.
Oh, I love coaching. Like, just hearing you, like, say all those questions, I'm like, oh.
It's so true. It's so true.
It just can blow your, it can really blow your mind. So tell me, so say someone's listening to this podcast and they're in their car and maybe they're on their way to work or they're at the gym. They're going to go to work tomorrow morning and they kind of, you know, they're that woman who's got this, maybe she has a 6-figure job that she's worked her way up the corporate ladder. And so tell me, what are the signs that you're in a soul? I mean, it sounds very obvious, but I think that we get so many times we get so used to being uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. We get comfortable being comfortable is what I like to say. So what are some like telltale signs of someone that needs to work with you, that needs to leave their job, that needs to change careers?
Oh my God. The first thing that popped into my head is energy. Just noticing where your energy level is at throughout the day. Where is it when you wake up in the morning? Where is it when you go to bed? Where is it when you're finally done with work for the day and you're home? Either, you know, with your family and feeling still very drained and lethargic, or, you know, if you don't have a partner and kids to come home to, like, what are you doing in your free time? Is it just vegging out in front of the television? Is that all you could handle? Or like going out with your friends and drinking every night? I mean, to me, those are really big signs. It's how you're feeling. And then I think it's that piece of how important is it for you to feel authentic and connected and fulfilled in your career? And are you willing to do the work in order to find out what that would look like and then make those changes? And I think, you know, I think a lot of people, and obviously I have very low tolerance for this. And as I was getting my coaching certification, I was an executive assistant at a financial consulting company for 2 years and 7 months. And I would hear this from my fellow colleagues all the time, but it's just like, oh, I will never be able to find another job. Work is called work because it's not supposed to be play. Mm-hmm. Like this is, you're supposed to not love your job. Nobody loves their job. This is how it's supposed to be. And so I think when you're someone like that, and that's your attitude and perspective, it takes a lot more work to get off that train of thought and be able to be like, no, you know what? Things can change. I can make a transition. I could figure out how this is going to work. The people that come to me, and sign up to coach with me are at that place where, again, they might not know what it is, but they are ready to make the change. And sometimes I hear like, I've been thinking about this for 2 years. I've been thinking about this for 3 years. And finally they come to the realization of I'm not getting any younger. They might still have 20 to 30 years of work ahead of them and they're finally just not going to take it anymore. That's it. They feel like a fraud. They feel like a fraud or they're really bored. They're really bored. They're not learning anything new. They're not using the skills that they love. Like there's just such a disconnect from what they're doing day to day and what they want to be doing. Yeah. And that's really the key, I think.
You painted such a great picture and it reminded me of when I was a lot younger. I think I was 21. Mm. And I was not that kid that knew what they wanted to be, which I don't think a lot of kids do. I think they either make it up or they do what their parents want them to do. But most of my friends went to like really great colleges. I grew up in San Diego, so a lot of them went to USC or UCLA or you know, Florida, all these really great colleges. And I went to junior college and just floundered around and mostly went to the mall and to the beach and parties. And then I finally, it was like my parents were like, okay, you probably should figure something out. So I went to fashion merchandising school because I loved clothes. Seriously, I'm not kidding. Uh-huh, like, that was my mentality at 19, 20 years old. So I graduated and I got an amazing job as an assistant buyer for a chain of surf shops that were on the West Coast and Hawaii. And it was really like, I'm not kidding you. When the Devil Wears Prada came out, Michelle, like I was like, that was my life except in the surf industry. And it was horrible.
Oh my gosh.
But it was one of those jobs that like every girl would kill for. And I got to go to these really amazing trade shows with all these, and I got free clothes and like the cute boys, like the boys that worked for Quicksilver and Billabong and Hurley, like, oh my God, I
was in the little heaven. Surfer boys. Oh my
the
God,
perks
right.
were amazing. The 9 to 5, or I should say like 7 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Oh my
was
gosh.
Horrible. And what for me was, I was crying almost every morning in the shower getting ready for work. Mm-hmm. And it was a privately owned company and they were terrible. But you know what did it for me was I looked around at like the execs and the higher ups, like the buyers, and I looked at their lives and they just did not seem happy at all.
Nice.
And I remember at 21 years old, I was not evolved at all, but I had enough sense to say, if that's my future, I don't want any part of it. It's so not worth it. And I was very superficial and materialistic back then. I'll admit. But I left and I got spanked as I left. Like the VP of the company called me in her office and said, like, I can't believe you're leaving to go to a job where she was just a bitch. Uh-huh. So they were mad. And like, that was really an indicator too, that it wasn't a great company, but they're not around anymore. But it just like that, it was my intuition. And I think that that's kind of what you were pointing to as well, is my intuition said, this is not right.
There's definitely been times in my life where my paycheck ran out before I got paid again, and I wish I could have accessed my next paycheck a few days before I was due to get it. Well, what if I told you that can happen with Earnin? Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. You can use Earnin for anything you need to, therapy visits, rent, or even extra self-help books. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Noise under podcast when you sign up. It really helps the show. Noise under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Trying to find the perfect gift for someone special in your life, maybe for Mother's Day, but feeling overwhelmed? Finding a unique gift that they'll love, that's personal and that they won't already have, can be the ultimate challenge. That's why I'm so excited I've discovered Songfinch. It's an amazing, thoughtful gift, and it's easy and fun to make. Songfinch lets you create an original radio-quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. I had Songfinch make me a song about my dad, which was a gift to myself. This was such a personal song for me, and I was a little skeptical the artist could capture the emotion I wanted. But during the process, they have you share some personal details about your relationship with the person you're creating the song for. Then a Songfinch musician of your choice, you get to pick based on samples they have, will write, record, and produce your original song in just 4 to 7 days. I love my song so much. I was so emotional when I listened to it. I had no changes. It's perfect. Whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, wedding, or anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free, so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Go to songfinch.com/noise and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, my URL is songfinch.com/noise. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/noise.
Yeah. And again, I think everyone has that like breaking point story. And I love yours, that yours was a realization of looking around at your superiors and being, you know, if I don't want that life, then what am I doing here? And what am I working towards? You know, for me, my infamous story happened, my gosh, before I got that executive assistant job, I was in a account management role, which like on paper should have been so perfect. So, you know, just like your job on paper should have been so perfect, but you wanted to do, this was like a startup company with really young people, and everyone was like super, you know, casual, and it was in Soho, and I was kind of like the liaison between the company and the client. So I was doing my, you know, client relationship. I feel that I'm such a relationship manager person. And just on paper, it looked great, but I had this boss who, was, you know, abusive, like, mm-hmm. Let's call it like it is. He was so verbally abusive. I think he was so threatened of anyone, not that I would ever want his job, but he was so threatened of the people that he managed doing a good job that no matter how much the clients loved you, he would just berate you and yell at you in front of the whole office. And it just got to the point where I was on the subway in New York City going to this job, and we pull into Union Square, which is one of the busiest subway stations mm-hmm. in New York City, in the middle of rush hour, one stop away from the stop that I was supposed to get off to go to work. And I felt so sick to my stomach, I had to run off the train and like dry heave into the trash can.
Oh my gosh.
In the middle of rush hour. Like, thank God I didn't have breakfast yet or whatever. Like, nothing came out, but it was pretty disgusting. And I said, like, oh, obviously I'm really sick. And it shows the hold that this job had on me, that I didn't just like get back on the train in the other direction and go home, or get, you know, above ground and take a taxi and go home. I was like, I have to make it to the office to grab my laptop so I could work from home. So I did. I like went up to the street and I walked the, you know, 10 to 12 blocks to the office. And I said, I'm really sick. I almost threw up on the train. Like, I gotta go. And the second I left, I felt fine. Hmm. And that to me was my wake up call, not only from that job, I needed to get out of that job, but I'm not happy doing this. At that point, I was still kind of kidding myself that I was pursuing acting, which I hadn't at that point for probably a year or so, but I didn't really come to terms with it. And then that was my wake-up call of, like, you're not pursuing acting. You're not this is not the job for you. You have to get out of this situation. It's just not healthy. And, like, what is it that you want to be when you grow up? And I really seriously had to look at that. So I think we all have those types of stories. And hopefully the end result is, you know, where we both are and careers that we love, working with people that just make us so excited and, mm-hmm. and really getting up in the morning and knowing that the things that you have to do that day are things that you are excited to do and yeah. want to be doing.
Things that are important to you. Yeah, absolutely. For sure. I'm curious too, you know, somebody that's brand new to this phase in their life, you know, they've gotten to the point where they realize they don't want to be in this career anymore, and they have maybe an inkling of what it is that they would rather do. So what do you think is the biggest thing that gets in their way, and how would they begin to start to overcome that?
Oh, yes. Okay. I feel like the biggest thing, because there's so many little things and so many commonalities I feel like we all have, but I think the biggest thing are just the voices in our own heads. I know everyone kind of has their own term for them. I call them the vampire voices, because they're there to suck the good things out of you. And they tell us lots of different things, but I think the main thing they just tell us is that that's never going to work. It's never going to work. Mm-hmm. And they tell you all the reasons why it's never going to work. And they base it off of, like, nothing factual, right?
Right.
So, you know, I've had clients that have said to me, like, oh, Michelle, you know, I've been dreaming forever about being an interior designer, but I know that interior designers don't make any money. It's like, well, how do you know interior designers don't make any money?
Haven't they ever seen Designing Women?
Be like, Delta Burke seemed like she really, you know, made quite a career for herself.
One of the best shows ever.
So funny. But it was the basis of nothing. There's never a reason, or there's a reason that's 10 years old. It's like, oh, I knew this person 5 years ago, and like, it didn't work out for them, so therefore no interior designers.
Well, everyone says, you know, quote unquote, everyone says.
Right. Always. Everyone says, this is what I read, but like, meanwhile, they can't reference it. It's like years and years and years old, or it's just this belief that like they've had for so long, or something that maybe their teacher said or their parent said, where they just haven't figured it out mm-hmm. for themselves to see, well, how could it work? There are plenty of successful interior designers. Or, you know, we're telling ourselves like, you can't do that without going to school and then spending all this money on, you know, a master's or a bachelor's or whatever. And no one's going to take you seriously unless you know, so it's like, you're too old. I mean, all of those sort of things all kind of make up for it. So I always say, and I think this is honestly probably the hardest thing to do, but the most important thing to do, is when you just start in this process of discovering or trying out what it is you want to quote unquote be when you grow up, you have to suspend disbelief. You have to just say, you know what, for the next week, I say, like, even give it a time limit. For the next week, all those voices that I have in my head telling me why it's not going to work, I'm going to say, well, thank you, voices, for your opinion. I'll think about that later. And you push them out for that week. And so you're not focusing on why it's not working. You're just getting information, and really seeing, okay, if I believe that this could work, how does this work? How could it work? Are my assumptions true or false? And so I feel like that's the biggest thing, to kind of give yourself a break and say, I'm not going to tell myself that I can't do this mm-hmm. right now. And then what would it look like if I stopped telling myself I can't do this?
Yeah.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah, it's such a great tool. And for anyone listening, you know, that can be applied really to any part of your life. And, you know, people that have been listening to me for a while know that I talk about that a lot, about untangling your beliefs. And it really starts with the conversation that you're having in your mind, because it impacts everything, impacts your behavior, your feelings. I mean, because that's really where it stems from. And then also, like, what's coming out of your mouth? Because a lot of times, like, what is going on in our head comes out of our mouth. So watch out for that, kids.
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, and to add on to that, I think that once you kind of find those trigger words, and that's something that, you know, you could work with a coach on, and your coach could probably tell you, like, these are the words that I hear all the time. These are like the negative words that lead to these limiting beliefs. And so tell your partner, tell your family, tell your parents, like, when you hear me say this word, could you point it out to me?
Because we don't even realize it sometimes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
It becomes just part of our, just every, it's like breathing. That's what I tell people. Like, I mean, I remember the first time I started doing this work and I started learning about that, I was blown away. I was like, you mean that this isn't my truth? All of these beliefs that I have, like, but I've been thinking this way for, you know, for as long as I can remember. It's empowering to know that you created that way of thinking. And it might be based on stuff that happened in your childhood or past relationships, et cetera, but you absolutely have the power to untangle it and create a new way. It's actually science. Like,
it is. It totally is, which I'm so not qualified to talk about at all. I really don't know anything about, but I think
I've read,
you know, but it is. I mean, it's absolutely science. And I think that, not to say, you know, there are plenty of times that you make the realization or you tell something to yourself in your head and, like, doesn't mean that it's going to be acted upon right away or you're really going to believe it. But there's kind of, I feel like, a fake it till you make it peace. And I always feel like trust is the hardest thing in this process, but it's the only thing that you could really, use in order to propel yourself forward. But really just, you know, trusting in the process and your own work and, that forward movement and just being able to say, you know, like, I'm just going to move forward as this is going to work. And I always tell my clients, you know, with every single person that I've worked with personally, I have never not once found the what without finding the how. I've never had a client that said, I want to be a freelance writer, and then we couldn't figure out a way for them to be a freelance writer in their grown-up way and make it a lucrative job or have it give them what they need ever. So I think as much as you could trust that, like, oh, when I figure out the what, I'll be able to see the how. You might have to think outside the box. You might need to hire someone to brainstorm with you. It's sometimes really hard to kind of do this stuff for yourself. But that's I think, a big piece of the puzzle too. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Mm-hmm. So kind of switching gears here. I know that you are a huge fan / groupie of Judge Judy. Judge Judy. So I want you to tell us why. Like, how does JJ impact your life? Why we should love her too.
You were so funny. I will take out my ukulele and I will sing the song.
Please
that
do.
Would be the contest. To meet Judge Judy just 2 weeks ago, you know, I guess I've been watching Judge Judy every weekday morning. I always DVR her show in the afternoon. And then, like, for whatever reason, I need my dose of Judge Judy justice in the morning. I'm not interested in it later in the day. So I want to wake up and, like, take my shower and then make my smoothie and my coffee or pour my cereal and, like, watch my 20 minutes of Judge Judy. And I guess I've been doing that for about 8+ years because my husband recently said, yeah, you've been doing this since I've known you. And I was like, oh, really? It's been that long? But I think that, you know, Judge Judy is this real, I'm such a recovering people pleaser, and I'm someone that struggles and still struggles with like saying no. And I want to do all the things and be with all the people. And I think Judge Judy's like just this powerful woman, but who acts, I don't want to say she acts like a man, but she has these characteristics of just like, I'm tough. I know it's right. I know it's wrong. I'm calling the shots. It's my courtroom. Mm-hmm. She's not taking people's excuses. You know, I feel like that helps me in terms of coaching. Like, she hears someone making excuses about why they don't have a job or why they lent this person all of this money without a contract or why they did this stupid thing. She's like, that's an excuse. That's not valid. So, you know, she does all of that, but at the same time, she has heart and she wants things to be fair. And, you know, she's able to call the shots. So there's this like power, but in a way that I think translates to me, that you could still be nice, get things done, without just totally letting people step all over you.
Yeah. Cause I haven't watched her in a long time, but I always remember that I always really liked her, and she's, yeah, you explained it so well. And if you guys don't know who she is, like, she is, she's just kind of like the ultimate ass kicker. Like,
she is.
Does not take anyone's shit.
Right. She's the original. I mean, it's so funny. Like, I started thinking about, you know, the reality shows that I actually DVR as opposed to the ones that I just, you know, if I'm sitting on the couch one day and they're on, I'll watch it. But like, you know, it's the Millionaire Matchmaker. It's Tabitha.
Yeah, Tabitha I love Jillian over. Michaels too. She has a little bit of that too.
Yeah, who?
Jillian Michaels.
Oh yeah. Oh, totally, totally. So it's like, oh, what do all these women have in common? They're all, you know, they're at the top of their class in terms of their business stuff. They know what they're doing. They're not afraid to tell it like it is. And they're, you know, calling the shots and are powerful. And it's like, oh, I see that through line. Okay, great. Mm-hmm.
I love that. Uh-huh. Yeah. I even need to start watching more of her too. So that's, mm-hmm. It's so cool that you got to meet her too.
Oh my God. Fan.
Is so she tiny?
Cool. She's very tiny. She's super tiny. I actually said to her, you're really tiny. She kind of didn't say anything. And I said to Luke, oh my God, do you think that I like offended Judge Judy? She's upset that I called her tiny, but, no, she's very petite and she's very skinny.
Oh yeah, she's getting up there, isn't she? Older?
Well, she's 72.
Wow, yeah.
Gosh, she's the highest paid and most watched daytime show.
Susie Orman's another woman that's like her that I really like. Yeah,
totally.
I need to cut out all these women's faces of magazines and put them up on my vision board.
Put them up! Oh my God, I love that.
I just gave me a great idea.
And maybe Judge Judy was kind of the catalyst for it. She's been on, when we were there, they're like, we're shooting season 19. And it's like, oh my God. Oh, yeah. 20 years of Judge Judy.
That's funny. Okay, I have one more question for you before we wrap it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was spending some time on your blog, and I read a couple of your blog posts where you were responding. This may have been like a few months ago, but you were responding to the whole, like, going after your passions is bad advice. Cause like a lot of those articles were going around.
Yes.
Cause I know that, like, you know, life coaching is getting more popular and a lot of these inspirational memes are floating around social media. And so people were writing about that. So can you tell my listeners what your opinion is on that? And, you know, tell us more about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're talking specifically about, it was one of those articles. Oh my God, it made the rounds times a million. And it was just like, following your passion is like belittling the people who have to do menial work.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that that's BS.
Oh, hey, everybody. It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory, two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it?
We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky, wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders. So, join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Get out of there, life gunk. Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January. Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking it.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.
You know, I think at the end of the day, obviously what you're doing for yourself and your own goals and belief system and whatever is for you. It's not for anyone else. So I don't think there's this automatic assumption that, you know, by me being able to quit my job and be the one I grew up coach full time and helping other people find their own thing and do it means that the people who are cleaning toilets aren't doing meaningful work. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's this judgmental piece that really doesn't need to be there. But I think at the end of the day, you know, I had another post about like why it doesn't matter if your dream job is in demand, quote unquote. And you know, we get sucked into like, here are the top 10 jobs of 2014, or here's like the most popular college majors, or here are the fields that are hiring. Yeah. And you know, at the end of the day, it's just a moot point, I feel like, because you know, if you make your decision based on, oh, there's always going to be a job for lawyers, and then you become a lawyer because you feel like you could always be employed. You know, there's a ton of lawyers and there's a whole bunch of law firms, and like, then you're not as unique. You're obviously not interested in what you're doing. You're not going to do it very well if you don't love it, which is going to make you not like an indispensable person and someone that's going to have a good career. So at the end of the day, you know, I think that like, follow your bliss is, you know, maybe a bit too general or pie in the sky sort of thing. Because I also have the piece of like me being a quote unquote failed actor and feeling like, you know, if follow your bliss was true, then I would be on Broadway right now, you know, like, but there's something to be said for giving yourself that opportunity of like, I'm doing this because I love it. Let's see what happens. Let's just show up and do the work and see what happens. And I've become more and more and more of a hippy dippy the more and more I do this work, because I see it happening with me and I see it happening with my clients that like, once you get that clarity, figure out what you want for yourself and you start talking about it, that's the secret. Then the doors are opening, as opposed to you trying to like push the doors open that are being jammed shut. So I think that, you know, following your passion is a good jumping off point.
Yeah.
To that. You know, and I feel like it's just worth reiterating that like at the end of the day, we're all just really looking for the type of things that we'll wake up in the morning and know that we have to do, and we're happy that we're doing them. That like at the end of the day, that's what finding your passionate grown-up career is about. And sure, there's parts of every job that we're not going to love. But for the most part, we want to just feel like we're getting out of bed this morning and like we're going to be able to, you know, do things that we enjoy for the vast majority of the day. And like, that's a successful grown-up passionate career in my book.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. That was actually a similar conversation on NPR. I'm recently converted to NPR, and that I love the TED Hour, and I forget the name of the name. It might have been the name of the show. Might have been Success, and Tony Robbins was on there. Mm. And you know, Tony Robbins always talking about, you know, following your passion, and he had a different conversation with Mike Rowe of Dirty Jobs. And it was really interesting to hear both of their perspectives. And even Tony Robbins said, yeah, well, sometimes our passions are our hobbies.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and I think that, again, that goes back to, like, it's not a one size fits all solution. I mean, I wish it was. I wish that there was just some formula or some test that I could create or find or give to people and be like, here's a formula, here's what it is. But, you know, there are people that say, like, oh, my passion is playing the drums, but I know that if I made that my career, I'd lose that passion. It would become something else. And so, you know, for those sorts of people, it's like, okay, well, then you're the type of person that needs to know you have that built-in time to play your drums or to be in your band, or like you have the energy. I'm really all about the energy, that you're leaving this job at the end of the day with the energy to go play your drums or write your novel or whatever it is you want to do, that you know you need these sorts of activities in your life.
Right. It's interesting because my husband's sort of going through that same thing where he works for kind of a smaller corporation in Salt Lake City in software, in engineering software, and he trains companies, and it's not a job that he jumps out of bed and is ecstatic to go. And he likes it. Uh-huh. He likes it, and it, you know, gives us insurance and a stable paycheck, and he likes his coworkers, and his, you know, and the higher ups are just fine. But you know, his passion is in woodworking. And so he and I have had lengthy conversations, you know, about, do you want to start this business? Do you want to, what do you want to do? You know, cause I'm a coach.
Yeah, that's what I do. Our poor husband.
But like, he's kind of at the point where he's not sure if he'd want to, like, he sees people that have like these big shops, and they have businesses, and they're working really long hours, and they're working on the weekends, and they're making a living, but he's just like, I don't know if I want that. So it's an interesting journey. And I think that one that is kind of personal for everyone, and neither way is wrong or right.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and something like that, it's really interesting. And I love that you're having those conversations with your husband. I mean, you know, I always try to encourage my clients to like act as if, so if your husband was able to, you know, take a week off of work and act as if his job was woodworking, like, what would that be like? And how would he do that? And what would he want it to look like? But it's also interesting hearing you talk about, like, oh, he sees that it's working for other people. He sees that he's able to make a living, but it seems like he also sees, I'm not necessarily willing to put in the hours that it takes to do this, or I don't want such a, you know, complicated company or setup. I want something smaller. I mean, it could really, I feel like this is where also coaching kind of comes in, and not to gender stereotype, but like women in particular, we don't necessarily want to be moguls and have these big empires, and like, we just want enough, quote unquote, that we could, again, wake up in the morning, love what we're doing, know that we're contributing to the household in the way we need to contribute to the household, and that we're filling our days with things that make us happy. Sometimes I think that men think a little differently, and this is part of the reason why I work really now only with women, is that men think differently, that like, oh, I have to make it into the biggest thing ever, or I have to lead this big company, when like, in reality, no, you don't have to do that. You could still, you know, have a successful shop and quote unquote, just be on Etsy and, you know, in your local farmer's market or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's interesting figuring out that your own personal version
what
of success.
Works for you. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I told everyone in the very beginning where they could find you, but I would love to remind them. So why don't you tell people the best way for them to get a hold of you and find all your best stuff?
Absolutely. It's whenigrowupcoach.com is the one-stop shop. You'll see all my social media buttons at the top of every page. So I'm really active on Twitter. I'm really active on Facebook. And you know, you'll see, I think the place to start is just, it says new here. So that'll be easy to find. You'll go to my site for the first time and see new here and click on that page. Cause I've really spent so much time kind of curating my own content as to, what would help you in terms of where you are in your career change process. And for sure, absolutely, like, sign up for my free newsletter list. You'll get a great video series, 10 ways to discover work that feels like play. And I've had that up since the summer, and I just keep getting all these wonderful comments about how helpful it's been. So that's like a win-win, right?
Well, there. And it, you know, go on there just so people can watch you and hear you play the ukulele.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, you know, I think you're the only person I know that plays the ukulele.
Really? You know, it's gotten so hipstery that I definitely like some people that are picking it up. But yeah, if you want to play an instrument, man, it's definitely, I think, the easiest one to kind of pick up and learn. Yeah, and it's like, you know, $20-$30. I mean, when you're a real like Renaissance soul like I am, and you want to kind of learn all the things and do all the things, it's like a really no pressure way to be like,
so cute.
You know, it's not the guitar. Like the guitar just seems so big and scary. This is like, oh, it's a ukulele. It's so easy and it's cheap and there's only 4 strings and it's really
anywhere.
Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cute.
It's really fun.
Well, thank you so much. It's been so fun talking to you. I always love talking to you, but I've never been able to like truly talk to you about what you do. And it's so fascinating. And I know that a lot of my listeners are in soul-sucking jobs and could really use your help. So head on over there. And thank you again so much, everybody.
Thank you.
See you next time for episode 34. Bye.
Bye.
Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. While you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood wherever you listen to podcasts.